Many of you probably are very familiar with Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow was the Heisman winning quarterback at the University of Florida several years back, who, after he graduated from Florida, went on to try and play in the National Football League, but ultimately made his way to the broadcast booth. Tim Tebow recently has decided that he wants to be a Major League Baseball player, and so in the last month, he has tried out for numerous teams and signed a contract to play with one of the New York Mets minor league baseball teams. Now, what's more famous about Tim Tebow is his Christian faith. All the way through college and through his professional football career, and even to this day, he is one who stands up for his faith in an amazing way. That's why I found it particularly funny when a satire magazine, it's an online satire magazine called the Babylon Bee, which mainly pokes fun at the church in a good-hearted way and pokes fun at Christians, decided to make fun of Tim Tebow this week as he begins his baseball career. They said that as Tim Tebow played in one of his first games, that he was hit by a pitch. That wasn't true, but for their story, they said it was so. And that, like most baseball players, when Tim Tebow got hit by a pitch, his response wasn't to charge the mound to fight the pitcher, as often you see in major league sports. That Tim Tebow's response was to charge the mound and offer instant reconciliation. And they went through and through about how he ran out with his arms open wide to forgive the man who had hit him with a 100-mile-per-hour fastball, and how the players didn't know what to do, and the whole team came out and he led them in a prayer movement on the field. It was funny, mainly because it wasn't true, but it sounded like something Tim Tebow might do. But it's interesting, even though it was funny, it was more accurate than perhaps we often realize. I've told you the last 2 weeks as we began this study on the Sermon on the Mount that it's easy for us, the church, to look at the Sermon on the Mount and just sweep it under the rug. That for the last several centuries, the Sermon on the Mount hasn't been very popular because it's quite uncomfortable. And so as we read things in the Scripture and as we begin to study what Jesus is talking about when it comes to following him, those things that get uncomfortable or challenge us or might prompt us to acts like instant reconciliation are the things that we sweep away and say, I'd rather not do that. Turns out Tim Tebow may be closer than we realize. The last 2 weeks, Jesus began this Sermon on the Mount by offering a broad picture of what his way really looks like. He came to the people who were forgotten and overlooked. He came to the people not that we would have expected him to show up to, but to the ones that the rest of the world had said, you don't matter. We remember the good news of Jesus coming and saying, no matter where you've been, no matter what you've done, no matter what your past or your story is, you are welcome in my way of living. And then last week we saw in the second part of the introduction to the speech that he talked about that as we live into who he's calling us to be, that we will become salt and light. We talked about how our job as believers and those living in the way of Jesus is that wherever we go, our life should be bringing forth the God flavors of the world. We talked about how foolish it would be to have unsalty salt, that you can't have Christians who aren't being salty. If our lives aren't producing salt, then we need to ask how closely we are connected to the one who makes us salty. We talked about how foolish it would be to have light that didn't push back darkness. The very nature of what light does is it pushbacks the darkness. And so our actions, as we go about living our life, as we live into the way of Jesus, naturally repel the darkness and bring people closer to the Father. Well, Jesus shifts gears as we turn to this part of chapter 5 in Matthew's gospel, and he begins to move into the meat of exactly what it's going to look like to live in his way. One thing that's important to remember as we work our way through the Sermon on the Mount is that it is always good news. So frequently in the church, anything that's challenging or uncomfortable, we think, oh, that must be something that's asking too much of us. But anything that Jesus says is good news. Jesus doesn't just offer a good way or a helpful way. Jesus offers the way. The best way. He is the smartest and wisest man that ever lived. And so whatever he offers to you and me is valuable in our life right now. In this section of the Sermon on the Mount that we'll look at for the next few weeks, Jesus brings up six very classic and well-known laws that the religious people of that day would have said, these are big, important laws that everyone should model in their life. And Jesus recites the law that they would have been used to hearing, and then he comes back and offers his new interpretation of what it looks like to begin to live into it. And really, in this pattern of reciting a law and then offering a new interpretation of it, but Jesus is showing us what it looks like to move from a performance-based religion that says the way you know the blessing of God is by what you do or how much you have, into living fully into a life that is transformed into the likeness of Christ and joins his mission in the world. And so the very first one that Jesus starts with as he stands in front of that mass of people on the Sermon on the Mount is one of the ones that everybody would have already known. He says, "You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not murder.'" Well, that's good for Jesus, a good young Jewish man, to quote directly from the Ten Commandments, to bring one of the well-known rules and to hold it out and say, "This is exactly what the law says." And everyone in that crowd, much like you might do today, would have nodded along and said, "Yes, that's exactly what the law says." And then he adds another comment, a commentary out of the book of Exodus, and says, "Whoever murders will be liable to judgment." Now, it's important for you and me to think about the context in which Jesus is speaking, because if we want to understand what he's going to challenge us to, we have to know the context. You see, in that first century world, this is exactly what would have happened. If somebody committed a murder, they would have been apprehended, they would have been brought before a council, they would have been given an appropriate punishment, and then carried off to a guard who would have executed the punishment. You know, in many ways, murder, just like in their century, in our century, this is a biggie. And for most of the people that day, they were probably glad to go, "Wow, I'm glad he's starting with this. This one is one that I think I can do all right with." And so they would have heard this and they would have said, "Yeah, not along. That's exactly what I want to happen. If someone commits murder, I want them to be apprehended. I want them to be taken before the judge. I want them to be appropriately punished and then sent to have that punish handed out by the guards in play." And so they would have all nodded along and wondered what Jesus was getting at. And then Jesus does what Jesus does best. Just when he has them thinking that they are on the same page with him and understanding exactly what he's about, he begins to turn the world upside down. And he says, "But I want to say something else to you." He said, "I have an idea about maybe how we think about this." He says, "This way that you handle murder, this whole arrest them, drag them into court, punish them." He says, "Well, what if we were going to play that out?" You see, because the real issue with murder isn't murder. Murder is only a symptom of something deeper inside our heart. He said, "Murder is really an issue of anger, and that anger is the real issue here." And he says, and if we really want to do something that's going to make a difference, just policing people to make sure they don't commit murder isn't really the goal. Because everyone in this room can say, I haven't struggled with this, but Jesus says everyone in this room struggles with the issue behind it. And so then he walks through, and what I love is that this is one of my favorite characteristics of Jesus. This is Jesus as the sarcastic teacher. It's a little tongue-in-cheek, but he says, if you really want to deal with this issue, he says, we have to deal with the issue behind murder. We have to deal with anger. And so he says, what if we begin to use this model that you've been using, this drag them into court and give them a punishment model, for every time somebody gets angry? He says, but I say to you, he said that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. When you get angry with your friend or your family member, how about we just arrest you and bring you to the court and we deal with your anger the same way you want to deal with murder? And then he pushes it a step further. He says, in fact, I say every one of you who insults his brother will be liable to judgment. And so he pushes it a step further. He says, yeah, every time you happen to insult someone, we're going to bring you to court. Now, at this point, the crowd was probably saying, Jesus, you can't police that. You can't really watch and make sure that anytime someone insults another person, that we arrest them and bring them to court. And then Jesus, over the top, best way he knows how to do it, says, I say to you, even if you say you fool, we should bring you before the court and arrest you. Now, just in case you think that this is some kind of Bible speak and doesn't apply to you, this would mean that every time that you're driving down 59 and one of those tourists slows down and goes really slow and doesn't know whether they're going to turn right or left, and you go, come on, man, you idiot. That's what he's saying. Is that every time you get any kind of anger at work in your life, anytime frustration crops up, anytime something churns in you where you're angry or you have a broken relationship with another person, Jesus is saying that if we try and live by the rules of the religious day, and that if we try and say all we're going to do is police murder, that we've missed all the places that anger shows up in our lives. And so he challenges to say, we can't approach the real issues of life by just using this religious model of going, if you only do the very worst thing, then we'll punish you. You see, because what Jesus was after in us has never been about just behaving in the proper way. What Jesus wants for our lives is to transform our hearts. Jesus always wants to deal with the root of the issue. Jesus is never satisfied with just policing our behavior. Jesus wants to see us reflect the very nature of who he is. That's what it means to walk in his light. That's what it means to live into his way. And so then Jesus, as he will do over and over again, flips this all around and says, instead of using this model that obviously won't work, I say to you, if you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. Jesus says that if you're in the midst of the most high and holy worship moment, this picture of being in the temple and the Holy of Holies and offering the very best that you can to God, and you remember that somebody has something against you, note that he doesn't say you remember that you have something against someone else. He says you remember that somebody else has something about you. He says, I would rather you stop going through the motions of being holy. I would rather you stop going through the actions of looking like you are doing all the right things before God and stop in the middle. Not finish it up and when you get around to it next week, go and make amends. He says, leave your gift. Leave what you're doing. Do not give appearance that you have a holy life if you have a broken relationship where anger is present. He said, I am much more interested in you relentlessly pursuing reconciliation than in you giving the image that you look like you are holy. You see, because what Jesus is always after is the depth of our heart, not the performance of our actions. And so Jesus challenged, he said, I would rather you leave your altar, your gift at the altar. I would rather you wait to take communion. I would rather you walk away and make peace with the people that you should make peace with and then come back and go through the motion. You know, that really makes sense. I mean, in fact, how well can we worship? How well can we turn our heart to God? How well can we focus on who God is and what he desires for us when our mind and our heart is clouded by the tense and brokenness of a relationship in our lives? Jesus pushes it with one more example where he talks that if someone is trying to take you to court, if someone is trying to accuse you, he says, do everything you can to settle that matter before you make it to the courtroom. Because if it reaches the point before going before the judge, you've already missed the chance to live into who I want you to be. You see, Jesus knows that policing murder doesn't change anything. Jesus knows that only when we work on our hearts will we begin to find new life and live into this way that Jesus has promised us is such good news. You know, I wonder what this looks like for the people called Foley United Methodist. I wonder what it looks like for us to be a people of relentless reconciliation. I wonder what it looks like for us to receive this good news. You see, it is good news, and the people in the first century knew it. Because probably like the biggies of the day, 99% of that crowd had not had to deal with the issue of murder in their lives. And they could all say, Jesus, I've kept that law. I've done that rule. I haven't committed murder. But every one of them had an anger issue in their heart. Every one of them had a frustration that they dealt with. Every one of them had a place where they were at odds with another person. Every one of them dealt with a misgiving with their brother or an insult or a you fool moment in the car. And Jesus says, you can keep the law and do all the right things, but miss the heart that I want you to have. And so Jesus invites us into something deeper. To say the good news is you don't have to be satisfied with keeping a law, but still having a broken heart. That you can begin to live into the life that is a life of wholeness. That you can begin to live into a life that deals with anger. That you can begin to be a person of relentless reconciliation. And you will begin to find a wholeness and closeness to God and a depth of relationship with other people. And then you will come to worship and your heart will be pure and you will know the life that Jesus promises as this good news. So what about you? What about your life of reconciliation? I wonder if you think over the last week in your own family, your own immediate closest circle of people, if there's been someone that you have gotten at odds with. Maybe it was a moment you didn't even think it was that big and you just swept it away and said, oh, I'm not really going to do anything about that. Or you just thought, that's just the way they are. What would it look like for you to pursue relentless reconciliation there? I wonder if there's someone in the last month, maybe from your workplace or your neighborhood, the community where you are, your Sunday school class, where something has happened. You got at odds with someone and you dismissed them, just decided you'd ignore them. You might have even gone as far as to say, they're dead to me. What would it look like for you to pursue relentless reconciliation? I wonder if in the last year there's been anyone at Foley United Methodist Church where there's been hurt or pain or things said that you wish weren't said or words that you would take back. I wonder what it looked like to live into the way of Jesus and pursue relentless reconciliation. Not just for the things you've done, although you should pursue reconciliation for those, but even if someone has something against you. You see, all of us can say we've kept the law, but can all of us say we've given Jesus access to our heart? In a few minutes, we're going to come and we're going to gather at this table and receive the gifts that Jesus gives us to remind us the value and power of what he offers. And so I wonder if, as you come this morning, you might open yourselves to becoming a person of relentless reconciliation. I love the story of Tim Tebow, mainly because it's funny. But what I really love about it is that in the Babylon Bee's effort to be funny, is they described the picture of what the gospel calls us to better than anything else we could do. That in that moment of pain, in that moment of hurt, that we would be a people who charge the mound with relentless reconciliation. Might that be who we become? Might that be the people that Foley United Methodist Church is? Might that be the characteristic that we're known for? Not that we keep the law and look holy, but that we give Jesus room in our heart and that we become all he is calling us to be.